Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Minorities in Tennis Show here at the UR Tennis Network, a show where I have the privilege of chatting with minorities involved in tennis and to learn about their unique experiences and stories. My name is Alex Chan, and I'll be your host for today. When I'm not hosting this show, I am a staff member working at USTA. Specifically, I work at the Mid-Atlantic section as a Maryland Tennis Service representative. I'm responsible for developing and supporting the growth of tennis in Maryland. It is also my home state. For more information about USTA's Mid-Atlantic section, please visit www.midatlantic.usta.com. And for more information about USTA Maryland, you can visit maryland.usta.com. Now, before I introduce my featured guest for today, I would like to take a moment to play some words from our sponsors.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
And welcome back. Again, this is your host, Alex Chan, and you're currently listening to Minorities in Tennis Show here at the UR Tennis Network. Listeners are more than welcome to call in to ask your guest questions during the broadcast by calling in at the same time at 714-583-6853. Again, that's 714-583-6853. Please stay on the line so I'm able to get you live on the air later in the show. Last time I did a show was actually a bit of a while ago. I did back in the My last guest was Alan Johnson. He is the grandson of Dr. Robert Walter Johnson, the person most responsible for molding and developing the careers of Althea Gibson and Arthur Ashe. So again, if you want to see that show, you can check it out on the Record Podcast. It's on demand. It's located at blogtalkradio.com/UR Tennis Network. But today, I have another special guest. His name is Mark Vito. He's the captain of the PC 4.0 18 over men's team, the Super Smash Brothers, a team that happens to be on as well. And he is actually joining me for the first time. This is the first time I have a guest that's with me. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Mark, I guess for those that are listening that may not know who you are just yet, can you go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone?
Yeah, my name is Mark Vito. I work right now as an IT product manager. I originally from the state of Michigan, living in the United States. Tennis is just one of my passions. Playing it a lot and playing it since I was very small. Figured we'd talk to them, have a little chat about that today.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I have you on the show.
Great, definitely.
Well, let's start from the way beginning. You started tennis when you were very small. So yeah, how did tennis get started in your life?
My parents forced me.
Okay.
At the very beginning. So my parents sort of had both my sister and I. So I have one sibling who's 2 years older. We were playing tennis, and for me, it stuck a little bit more than it did for my sister. We moved around a lot when I was small, but continued playing tennis. It was sort of the one constant that I had in my life. No matter where I went, there's some sort of tennis competition.
Mm-hmm. So, you played in competitively in high school, I'm guessing, and in college, or?
Interesting enough, neither.
Neither,
yeah. It's actually, when I was in high school, I was recruited to do crew instead.
Okay.
So that overlapped with tennis. In college, I went to the University of Michigan, and joining any type of club or varsity tennis there, the level was extraordinarily high.
Oh, okay.
So I did recreational. I played a little bit here and there. I had a couple of friends that that were probably on the same ability level as me, and we played a little bit, but nothing really competitive or regular.
Okay. And then after college, at some point you got started in doing league tennis, though, right? So how did that get started?
Yeah, so that's actually very interesting. So one of my work colleagues, I used to live in Richmond, Virginia, and one of my work colleagues just randomly reached out to me and said, "Hey, would you like to play league tennis, or are you free to play league tennis?" It was very interesting because I was actually looking to play more and more tennis, and I thought, I'm a USTA member, so yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I joined his 3-5 team. He said I'll play a lot of singles, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun, like the team aspect of it. You're rooting for each other. It's not just an independent sport, as it could be sometimes.
Yep.
You encourage each other. You kind of win and lose together. And I had a blast that first year, which is basically what motivated me to sort of continue playing league tennis, and I guess ultimately this year I become a league captain.
Right. So you were in Richmond for a while, and then you moved to the D.C. area, and then you started a team in D.C. For a lot of people out there, I think a lot of people aren't sure how you would have gotten started moving to a new area and starting a team. So how did initially first get the team started?
It's actually a very interesting story. So I knew a few people, and actually a friend and I from work. He just happened to be from Richmond, coincidentally, and he and I, he knew a couple of people. He went to school in Virginia at JSU, so he decided to just call up a couple of his buddies, and we got have a small group together. We just kept recruiting. We just kept asking people. We had somebody reach out to us as well. So it actually just sort of worked out. We just basically a lot of networking, going to courts and playing with people. It just comes down to the fact that I think league tennis in the Mid-Atlantic region especially is very strong.
Very strong, yeah.
A lot of very good competition.
Right. You mentioned that some people reached out to you. You happened to be a friend of mine named Marvin Martinez. He was also on one of my shows in the past. Do you want to tell us how he actually found you?
That was actually a very interesting story. So Marvin was an extremely valuable part of our team, played a lot of matches for our team and did extremely well. He's actually, today he's in Newport News mm-hmm. playing in Atlantic Sectionals.
Yep.
Very jealous.
Yeah.
We were very close to getting there, but he plays a lot of tennis. He mm-hmm. plays a lot of league tennis, and I think he wanted to join a Washington, D.C. based USTA men team
mm-hmm.
at 4.0. And so he was looking at the teams that were all signed up, and he looked at ours. Our team's name is Super Smash Brothers. He's a big fan of that game. So he said, and that was probably the eye catcher.
Yeah.
And it was a really random coincidence, but it worked out great. Great guy, great tennis player. Hoping to have him back.
Yeah,
in 20 years.
Yeah, Super Smash Brothers is a great name. what made you decide to name your team that?
That's interesting because one of my friends, he and I basically started this team. We actually got lunch together and decided we needed to come up with a team name. I had maybe 2 days to come up with it because mm-hmm. I registered our team pretty late. I didn't have connections. I didn't know what I was supposed to reach out to the coordinator. So,
mm-hmm.
So we talked about it a little bit, and then we sort of wanted to take advantage of the fact that we knew our team was going to be young.
Right.
And so he just randomly came up and just sent me an instant message IM through work.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
through work.
Yeah, we actually do work, but outside of that. And he suggested Super Smash Brothers, and I just couldn't give that one up.
Right.
So who knows? In subsequent years, we might need a Melee.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great name, that's like. And for anyone out there listening, if you did want to ask Mark a question about his league experience, you're welcome to call into the show. The number is 714-583-6853. Okay, so yeah, we've already talked a little bit about how you did some the recruitment part of it. Like, was there any difficulties with that? Did you run into any issues with recruiting people for your team, like having enough players? Or do you feel like it was a pretty easy ordeal?
I would never say recruiting was easy. I think that's probably the primary job of a captain, is to make sure you have enough people on your team in order to succeed. Enough people and the talent, right? The talent mm-hmm. is never a problem, because I think all the players on our team had the ability to basically every single match they played, they had an ability to win.
There's a chance to win, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the big thing was that we eventually got up to the 14 players, 8 players play every week.
Mm-hmm.
But it was difficult sort of originally. It was a little bit nervous at the very beginning for me because we started with 3.
All right.
We eventually got to 8 before the league mandated us to have 8. And then we just kind of kept, became a pretty fortunate cycle. People mm-hmm. knew other people, and people wanted to join our team and reach out to us. So it actually worked out well.
Okay, good. That's good. That's good to hear. Yeah, I know that there's always been some issues with other teams where trying to find enough players for a match. And then, there's the scrambling at the end trying to find people. So this is your first experience being a captain of a USTA league team. Was there anything that kind of surprised you about being a captain? Something that you weren't expecting, but you end up tending to do?
I think you covered it. I think recruiting was sort of the big thing, and I knew that going in. I think the primary job of a captain is the composition of your team.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was tricky to get people. I didn't know whether I'll have enough people every weekend we played. And the other thing was, as a new captain, it was a little bit difficult sort of getting into DC. And I think all the captains sort of knew each other and knew each other's style, so they can kind of,
uh-huh.
so the winning captains or winning teams tend to know how to play against each other.
Okay.
But yeah, besides that, that's something that'll come over time.
Right. That's what we just kind of said. That might be an advantage. Being a new team is that other captains didn't know who you were,
right?
And you kind of take advantage of that and surprise them.
Yeah, one of the captains reached out to me afterwards and said, "You guys came out of nowhere. Where did your players come from?"
Yeah, definitely. Actually, for a listener, I feel like for first year, we're a new team, we did pretty well. What was our overall rating or ranking at the end?
We ended up third overall in DC of a total of 13 teams. I'm obviously tremendously proud of the way our team did. We had, I think, a little bit of struggle with kind of week in and week out. I think we needed a couple more kind of people to kind of get us over the top. So I think recruiting is always, again, the biggest challenge for a captain, but you know, we had some pretty strong wins. We beat the number two team.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Which we really celebrated. So I think you know, overall, I'm happy with the way that things went for the first time for this year. We're looking for better and stronger next year.
Of course, of course. Yeah, I didn't think you would say, I want our team to be weaker next year.
Yeah, no, I thought about that.
Yeah, so overall, you know, just, you know, you come from Richmond, Virginia. Richmond is actually known as a pretty popular tennis hub. How do you feel about tennis in D.C.? I'm from Richmond.
Yeah, so I think, as you mentioned, I discovered Richmond tennis a little bit late. So after I was slated to move to Northern Virginia as part of my work, I started discovering Richmond tennis and kind of the awesome scene there. And they have awesome public courts. There are a lot of people there. You have some very strong teams going to championships like sectionals and districts. And they almost always come from Richmond. And in the D.C. area, I think it's you have a lot of strong players. You have a lot of interest in the area because you can play in you have three different districts within a small drive of each other. Like, I live in Arlington, and Arlington is very close to D.C. Arlington is very close to Maryland. So you kind of have a nice melting pot of players there. But I think it's very competitive, but I almost want to say that Richmond, I think Richmond tailor-made for tennis, almost.
Tailor-made? Like, just because they have a lot of courts?
A lot of courts. There's a lot of space.
I guess that's a big thing. That's one thing about up here in Northern Virginia, D.C. area. There's actually a big tennis team here, too, but space can be a big issue in this area, especially if you want to just, play.
Of course, and free parking.
Yeah, that's nice to have. You can't always have that around here.
Right.
That's good. That's good. So, all right. So now, I guess, how many years of UC Elite Tennis have you been in now? It's been like 2 years?
My second year, right? First year was in Richmond, second year was in Catholic.
Okay. All right, so you had like 2 years experience with league tennis. For those that are listening, not everyone had tested out UC Elite Tennis. Let me ask you, what are some reasons why one should play on a UC league? What would you tell them?
Structured and organized. I think there are a lot of, I think USPA is much more organized than a lot of other kind of ad hoc leagues that are popping around, and I really like the fact that even though there is a price to pay, but there is a kind of a set coordinator who puts together the schedules, organizes the matches and courts, and then there is a standardized rating program that's common throughout the nation. So if you're a 4.0 here, then you should be comparable to a 4.0
should
in Ohio.
Yeah.
Of course, there are discrepancies based on competitiveness in the area, but that's the point, is that it's a 4.0 in generic DC league. It might be different than a 4.0 in a generic Oregon DC.
USPA,
there's some sense of the standardization.
Okay.
And on top of that, I think you're, the big thing with USPA is an association. As an association, you're... some of the money that they're contributing to league tennis is helping build tennis throughout the community, in the communities, right? It's not just, you're having fun and you're enjoying a lifelong sport, but you're helping develop tennis as you're helping develop communities of tennis.
Yes.
So I think that's the big thing, right? I mean, that's went to the U.S.
Open. Right. Absolutely.
Right.
Actually, have you had experience playing in non-USTA leagues as well?
I haven't, actually. I've only been in USTA.
Okay.
I think my experience so far has been has been great. So
okay.
I haven't really had to explore outside.
That's good.
Especially in the Mid-Atlantic region again. Mid-Atlantic region, I think, they organize well.
Okay, that's good.
They're good for the players.
That's good. I'll let some of my my coworkers know who does leagues in the Mid-Atlantic. They'll be happy to hear that. All right, but then I guess as you know, we even amongst our staff people, we know that not everything is perfect. We always are trying to improve our program. So, looking at leagues, if you had to suggest any improvements that can be made to USA League, what could be some of those suggestions?
Yeah, I would actually have a very pointed and specific suggestion. I think that this is sort of the fact that in certain areas, I think there's such an appetite to register more teams. They open the floodgates to, let's say, there might be 15 teams in the league, but each team only has 10 players or 12 players.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, you probably need more like 15, right? But the problem with only having smaller teams instead of less teams with more people is that there is a strong risk of default. By that I mean teams always struggle to field enough players to
right.
develop an entire lineup.
Right.
I'm seeing that more and more, and I think I can understand the fact that they want to increase the chances of somebody playing.
Yeah.
But being on the other side of a default is not always a lot of fun.
Right.
And I just have to shake my head sometimes when I see my friends tell one of my players that their opponent's default is a match.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you're not playing today.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Because on one hand, yeah, they technically get the weakest to win, or if they get different tones,
yeah.
But at the same time, you want to play, you're there, you want to play, and that's what you paid money for.
Right.
What are your thoughts about the money aspect? Like, it's not, unfortunately, it's not free. You feel like it's a fair amount that you're paying?
Depends on where.
Okay.
I know in Richmond, it's very reasonable. It's just really the organizational cost. Some of them, the funds get split up between different groups. But I think and you actually schedule your own courts. In D.C., it's more expensive because the league schedules their courts for you. So I think it's I wouldn't say it's prohibitive for a lot of people, but it's definitely you want to be able to play. Right?
Yeah.
You want to have your matches if you're going to register for league. And I'm very cognizant of that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that enough people have matches in the results so that they're not paying these league fees and coming out empty-handed.
That's true, yeah. Okay, good. And then another thing that you didn't mention yet, but I know that some people have mentioned that it can get pretty competitive amongst the USA League players. There have been examples where gamesmanship has popped up, one player saying that a player to do something bad or whatever. Did you encounter a lot of that during this first year as a DC captain?
Yeah, I think questioning gamesmanship, I think that's inevitable. No matter sort of how, no matter if it's USTA, if it's non-USTA, if it's league or not. And that's really sort of the unfortunate part of all this is that I do see gamesmanship issues sometimes. A good example is the fact that a lot of leagues, DC, I think it's one of them, Virginia might be another, set time limits. And this is just because of course scheduling.
Right.
And you see some teams sort of trying to manipulate that, right?
Manipulate? In what way?
Well, I'm not sure if manipulate is the right way, but they would, for example, if you're up on the first set, there's protocols for breaking ties when the time is called.
Mm-hmm.
And they might try to stall their second set, because if you don't finish your second set, then the original team may have an advantage when it comes to tie breaks.
Yeah.
So there's some level of tactics to that, but at the very end, you're on the other side, you actually just want to play tennis, but your opponent's taking 2 minutes every time between points. You're starting to question, are you really trying to play the game or are you just here to get the W?
Right. Yeah, unfortunately, some people, they will do that to get the W. So they
right. And I think, by and large, it's a minority. A lot of the folks I played with in league tennis have been awesome sportsmen.
Mm-hmm.
They're there to play the game. fall lines fairly. They're not there to manipulate. They're there to play tennis on a wonderful Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, we're all playing tennis because we enjoy the sport. And, we want to have fun. So, okay, cool. For those that are listening, we're about at the two-third mark of the show. We'll be ending very shortly. If you want to call in, this is your chance, 714-583-6853. But for now, we'll just continue talking to Mark here. We're going to move on a little bit past the league topic, which we have talked about a lot right now. Let's talk kind of just in general about the show is called Minority in Tennis. I kind of looked into how tennis is doing in the States here. So let me ask you first this question. Do you see that tennis right now is acceptable to a diverse population in the United States?
I think, from my viewpoint, I think there's a lot of effort to bring minority into sports in general, and I think tennis is kind of part of it. I can see, especially in the leagues I play in, I don't see just a really non-diverse crowd. I do actually see diversity when I'm playing.
Okay.
I see Asian, obviously I see Asians. I see African Americans. There's all sorts of different groups that play. And I think the big thing about, this is sort of what I feel about sports, is a great equalizer, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter what your background is. In the end, you're a person on a court with a racket, you're hitting a ball. It's just you. If you win the match, you win the match. Winners are determined fairly. So, that's sort of the big thing I have is I think sports and tennis is very conducive to kind of just bringing in diversity.
Definitely. I like to make it tennis is kind of like an equalizer. It actually is a USA motto or phrase that even though we're all from different cultures or different languages or whatever, we all speak tennis.
Right.
So that's why we all play tennis and we all get along.
Right.
So, yeah, definitely. Now, let me ask this too. This is something that USA has always been trying to do. We always include diversity and inclusion of as much and major people into sport as possible. Besides the minorities, also just people that think that, it's not for them because these Asian tennis was for an elite class. We're trying to make them realize that, no, it's for everybody, even if you don't have a court to still play. I guess let's talk specifically with the experience of league tennis. What do you think would be some ways to incentivize more players to join USA League?
I think it comes down to, I think at a higher level, right, you need to get people excited about tennis.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the nice things about this is that if you, I'm a very big pro tennis fan.
Yeah.
I grew up in the era of Pete Sampras, watching him do basically crush and serve and finishing up on a volley has always been kind of mesmerizing for me. I think I started tennis because my parents forced me to, and then I continued because I saw someone like Pete Sampras become my idol.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you have good role models who play at a very high level, I think that's one way that you can sort of promote the game from top down.
Right, right. Actually, a lot of time when I do a show, I ask people about their role models. Actually, all my guests on the show have been ethnicity that's different. So your background is Japanese.
Right.
So I guess, do you feel that
Kenny Square, yeah.
Huh?
Kenny Square.
Yeah, I think Nakai, the Japanese player.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not sure, did they influence you as well? Did they feel like they motivate you?
Yeah.
Or?
He's actually the same age.
Yeah, okay.
It's very interesting because I actually look at Japan, when Nishikori is the first top 10, 15 tennis players since 4 bajillion years, you see a lot of interest in tennis start to swell up in Japan, and I think that's kind of a it's a self-feeding cycle. So I think in just in that way, you can sort of have the same thing in the United States. The unfortunate part is that U.S. men's in the professional rank is not as strong as Europeans. But I think, again, I think when you have role models that are tennis players that are performing at a very high level, I think you start to get kind of a swelling of interest.
Yeah, it is important. We don't have such strong men's players nowadays as you, when you were growing up. Stanford, Agassi. You were, nice. You were probably a little bit spoiled from that experience. We do have some decent men's players now. I know John Isner is in the top 10 or so, but yeah, it definitely doesn't compare, especially when you're facing other countries.
Yeah, you put Stanford next to the word dominate.
definitely. And you know, you mentioned Japan. I just remembered something. Isn't there a series in Japan, like, or Prince of Tennis? did you ever read those comics?
I did, and actually it's really funny, the only time that I actually didn't even know that a series existed. The only way that I realized that series existed was I was looking at eBay for Prince Tennis Rackets.
Oh, Prince Tennis Rackets, okay.
Yeah. And then Prince of Tennis came up, and I found it was a Japanese series. Sorry, totally random, but...
Yeah, my little brother likes reading the manga, I guess it's called, the manga comic.
Yeah.
Apparently they made a TV series of it too, as well. Have you seen that?
I have it.
I saw like clips of it. It's I was curious that they have a tennis as part of a very popular anime comic series. There's some interesting moves. Have you seen some of the moves that they have?
No, I haven't, but I've seen a lot of Roger Federer-esque
more crazy even that. Like, I saw one of the drop shot that just dies. Just, you hit it and it just stays on the ground.
I think engineering in college, physics, so I can't think about how that one is possible.
Yeah, I mean, they were exaggerating just the effect of what we can do with that.
Right.
Okay, great. So Mark, we reached towards the end of the show. I always like to give my guests a chance to say, is there anything else that we missed or any other topics you want to talk about? You can bring it right now.
Yeah, I think sort of on the theme of minority tennis. I think it's more of, I said this earlier, I think tennis is, like a lot of different sports, is a great equalizer. It's what you do. That matters, not necessarily the world around you. Well, I mean, your opponent matters, but... But the... right, so I think that's really sort of the great thing about this game. It's a lifelong sport. You see people our age all the way up to super seniors, but I'm looking forward to playing this game for the next 30, 40, 50 years.
Forever.
As long as I could stay standing up, I guess. So, been very fortunate to have found this game early and have been playing for a long time.
That's good. All right, cool. I guess any of that final thoughts, or you think you're good? All set?
That wraps it up.
All right, that sounds good. All right, I hope like the listeners out there are listening to the show that they actually learn a lot about how the league work, what some of the roles of being a captain is, and maybe one day you guys can also start a league team as well. So, Mark, thank you for coming on the show. It was a pleasure having you as a guest.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
Yeah, thank you. All right, guys, and that concludes our show for today. Thanks to everyone that tuned in. My next show should be coming up on August 24th. Guest will be Subodh Arora from the University of Maryland Tennis on Campus team. We're still designating a time for that, so stay tuned. To stay connected to all of the UR Tennis Network radio shows, you can be sure to subscribe to our channel. It's located at blogtalkradio.com/UR Tennis Network. And you can also like the fan page on Facebook. It's located at facebook.com/UR Tennis. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in to the Minorities in Tennis Show. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.